I want you to use your imagination this morning. Imagine with me up here four others. I even got them chairs so you can kind of, they're sitting up there. I was going to make them stand, but I decided this morning, you know, I'm going to get them chairs, and so I got some chairs for them. They're sitting there fidgeting, wondering what's going to happen. Is this like this two truths and a lie game they're about to play? What's going on? Four others: Harrison, Izzy, Jen, Samuel. Harrison kind of looks like me. He's wearing a suit. He's a more or less middle-aged white guy. His name is Harrison, right? You can begin to imagine, fill in the picture. Maybe you know him pretty well. Maybe he's you. Harrison has good values. He believes in justice and inclusion, and he gives to charity. He wants the world to be better. Materially, he's comfortable. He's got a job and a house and so on, but it's a little tentative. Other people at his company got laid off this year, and his savings aren't quite what they should be. And if you say, "Don't wait for justice, make it happen," he'll say, "Well, I don't know." If you march and rally and demand change now, he'll say, "Is that really necessary?" Harrison believes that the world will get better, and he wants it to get better. But he's not prepared to significantly sacrifice his tenuous status to make that happen. The speech from Dr. King that I quoted this morning, "The Fierce Urgency of Now," was about Vietnam. But I could have also quoted from his letter from the Birmingham jail to crying the white moderates who urge patience. "Wait until the appointed time," they told him. King's reply was, "We've been waiting for centuries. We've waited long enough. If not now, when?" And this: "Frankly, I have yet to engage in a direct action campaign that was well-timed in the view of those who have not suffered unduly from the disease of segregation." I do not mean here to embarrass or shame Harrison. Harrison's not a CEO or a senator. He doesn't run the world. He's a good guy. He feels his own pains and regrets his own fears and worries. But vulnerable as he is, it is not for him to set the schedule. To be in accountable relationship with those on the margins of society, with the most grievously harmed by our exploitive system, means to let them set the schedule. It is to feel the urgency of now. Not the discomfort of one who must watch the suffering, but the pain of the one who suffers. They're very different positions. So we say to Harrison, let go of your fear, let go of your patience, and start today. Act today on your values, which are good. The ingredients are good, but the soup won't cook unless you turn up the heat. That's Harrison. Izzy sits next to him. Izzy lives on the margins of society. She's lived in the darkness so long, waiting for the light to shine. If Harrison doesn't think he has power, Izzy really doesn't have power. And you can imagine, a high school degree, barely, and not a very good one, let's be honest. She works sometimes, but not for much money, usually without any kind of leave. So when the kid gets sick, or she does, she gets fired and she has to start over again. Izzy's life is not easy. She feels the urgent need for justice, wants the world to be better, but thinks it's just too hard. "I'll wait for the world to change. I can't make any difference in these great forces of history. I have no authority, no control, so I won't even bother. I'll just wait for the light to shine." And we can understand this position, right? It's perfectly reasonable, but it is no more acceptable than Harrison's patronizing caution. Because if Izzy doesn't speak up now, if Izzy doesn't fight for her rights, if she doesn't vote, doesn't organize, doesn't march, then her voice will be even more silent than it already is. And Izzy might say, and you might agree, that's not fair. It's not fair that she, on top of everything else, has to push for change and do it now, that we would ask that of her. It's not fair. It's not. And that's why she has to do it, and do it now. If it was fair, she wouldn't have to speak up if the world was fair, but it isn't. If she waits, she'll wait in vain. If she speaks, it might be hard, but something might happen. Christopher lit our chalice this morning. He spoke about his decision to not wait, to act, to be the change. And I'll tell you that I go to meetings in Rockford, work being done on justice and against racism, and 4 times out of 5, Christopher's at the meeting with no material power, right? He's a poet. Poet has no authority to hire or fire, no money to donate to politicians to buy his will. And there he is, filled with the urgency of now. He can do it. You can do it. What material does a retired school teacher, what material power does a retired school teacher have to change the world? Yet then I see you every week doing things at the table. It's not about worldly power. Act now. Be persistent, and you will help to move the world. So we stand in solidarity with Izzy, but if she wants the world to be better for herself and for those she loves, she can't wait, because there will never be a better time. And now is the time to make that world real. And we're going to have her back, right? Next to Izzy is Jen. Jen's great. She's got one of those faces you can't quite tell how old she is. It's hard to say. She is hopeful and filled with compassion. Jen likes pop music. She likes that song by John Mayer, you know the one, right? Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. We just feel like we don't have the means to rise above and beat it. So we keep waiting. Waiting on the world to change. It's hard to beat the system when we're standing at a distance, so we keep waiting, waiting on the world to change. Those of you who know this song, well, now you will now have it stuck in your head for the rest of the day. You're welcome. My pleasure. Jen also loves that quotation. The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. She loves that. Martin Luther King said that often. He adapted it from Theodore Parker. Jen likes it a lot. She believes that what will be, will be. She believes that justice is inevitable, that the truth, that love is strong enough to overcome the false and the hateful. Just give it time. Maybe Jen believes in God and believes that God will fix what's broken in the world, or maybe she doesn't, but she believes in reason and that folks will move upward and onward forever, that not in vain does the distance beckon. And there's a part of Jen in each of us, isn't there? It's what gives us hope. It's a product of our belief that deep down at their core, people are good. And we do believe that. And that's a good thing to believe, in that given time and love, that most people will do the right thing most of the time. We see evidence for that belief if you look closely, and we have hope. We do. But here's what I need Jen to know. Theodore Parker, who said that the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Theodore Parker, well, he doesn't mince words, I'm afraid. He would think that you, Jen, are a naive fool. That's how he would say it, too. Theodore Parker would like to show you the stack of cash that he raised to fund the work of the abolitionist John Brown, to buy weapons, to fight the war. He'll show you the gun that he keeps in the pulpit to ward off the pro-slavery mob that has tried to kill him more than once. He'll show you the speeches he's given all over the country decrying slavery in the strongest terms, working tirelessly to convince the public that this must end. Oh, Parker believes in hope, and he believes in the God of love, but he's not going to wait that long. Those in bondage cannot wait a day longer, for their lives, their bodies, their families, their souls are being destroyed. Moreover, Parker would tell you that God, if you want to say that, or justice, if you want to say that, love, if you want to call it that, love and justice and God, they have no hands, no voice, no power, except through us. The arc bends because we bend it. Somebody pulls on it. We hold to an incarnational theology that the sacred lives in and between us. We make it real, and we accomplish the work of the beloved community, the world of justice in our lives, in our work, in our voices. So, Jen, you don't get to wait for justice to work. You have to make it work. That's how it works. It doesn't happen because it just happens. Somebody does it. So Harrison, Izzy, Jen, down on the end, Samuel. Sam to his friends. And Samuel says, hell yeah, let's go. Samuel thinks Harrison is a sellout and Izzy is a coward and Jen is naive. Samuel is ready to go. The fierce urgency of now, baby, let's move. Samuel writes letters and carries signs. He goes to meetings and he says, we need to act now. No more talking, let's do something. Do you know Samuel? Earlier this week, I was in a meeting about race in Rockford. Christopher was there too. And one of the other pastors, friend of mine, Ricky Bates, he made a great distinction. I want to give him credit for between calendar people and watch people. When it comes to justice, calendar people say, let's see, I think I could meet on the third Thursday 2 months from now. Can we meet then? And watch people say, right now. Let's do it in the next hour. It's a great metaphor. Love it. Calendar people, watch people. Samuel wears two watches and they are set about 15 minutes fast. He is ready for the revolution. And what I want to say to Samuel is, wait. Wait. Oh, I know, I told Harrison to stop waiting, and I told Izzy, don't wait, and I told Jen, the act now, it is in your hands, but Samuel needs to wait. Just a little bit. Just for a moment. Not long at all. I still want him to lead the vanguard, calling the rest of us to accountability and action. But if Samuel doesn't wait for just a moment, he's going to be Remy the Rhino, with his horn stuck in the tree, being painted pastel colors by wildcats. Nobody wants that. In that letter from the Birmingham jail, Dr. King described direct action as the fourth step. You don't do it first. First, you research. What are the facts? Who do we need to convince to change? What will actually work? Not what does our gut say will work, but what does the research say will work? Second, you negotiate. You go to the powers and you say, here's what we need. Here's what we expect. And you make your case. You might get what you want easily. It happens every once in a while. And third, you pray. You purify yourself, King says. You ensure that you are acting out of love and not out of anger or hate. You stop and reflect. You ground yourself in love. You think about the long-term effects of your choices for justice. Are you making noise for noise's sake? Or are you building the capacity of organizations to affect change for the long term? Are you fighting for fun? Because you get a thrill out of the controversy? Or are you helping Izzy's kid have a better future? That's the test. You wait. You learn and talk and pray before you act. Nelson Mandela could have walked out of that prison door and said, I don't have the time for this truth and reconciliation nonsense. Let's get what's ours right now. That would have served neither his people nor the cause of love, but it would have been an understandable choice. And what we admire, what we celebrate, is that that's not the choice he made. He was willing to wait, not passively, actively, to be a patient but persistent leader. If you move too fast, you cannot hear the callings of the Spirit, and you cannot hear the voices of your allies or of the oppressed themselves. You need to wait for the speed of sound to catch up so that what they have to say reaches your ears and your soul before you plunge in. Look, all four of them have a point to be made. That's important. Harrison is right that we need to think it through, but that doesn't mean that paralysis is acceptable. Izzy is absolutely right. It's going to be hard, and we might get hurt, and we don't have enough material power. So we had better walk together and support each other. But real power comes from our hearts, not from our riches. And we've got to begin where we are. Jen is right that people are good and the truth will win out, but let's not wait that long. Let's give love and truth and goodness a helping hand. And Samuel is right. The time is now. But let's make sure that we look before we leap and pray before we protest so we don't get stuck in the tree, but actually make a difference. The work of building a just and beautiful world is complicated. It requires patient persistence. It's long-haul work, and that's even more reason to start now, not to wait, to keep at it when you've already started. Waiting for the world to change? No. Sorry, that's not okay. It's not an option. Pausing to get our bearings before we set off, that's fine, that's smart. But the world doesn't change by itself. It doesn't. It changes when people change, when we change, and it cannot wait much longer. So research and talk and center yourself, and then, friends, let's go. Samuel will, I'm sure, lead the way. Izzy will walk alongside as is right. Jen and Harrison are coming, so don't get left behind. The time is now, and the place is here. The work of justice, of love, of hope is waiting for us. It's time. We're going to sing together. We are not going to sing the song that's printed in your program. We're going to sing it together.